We're on, David. Kick us off.
All right. Well, then here we go. Welcome to Presidio Bitcoin Jam. How are you guys doing?
Great.
Doing awesome, man. 50 hours, I learned.
Yeah. This will be, we're post 50 hours.
That's
with
a lot.
This show now. 33 episodes booked, 50 hours of content, probably more because sometimes we go a few minutes over.
That's right.
And I don't think we've ever gone under.
Definitely not. Definitely not.
I had sort of dabbled in podcasting before, but I never really fell in love with it or was super regular about it. It was kind of always haphazard whenever I felt like it. And now kind of that we have this cadence and structure, like let's get together at noon Pacific on Fridays and do this. It's like, it's a moment of joy I look forward to each week. And now it's, you know, I'm kind of in love with the process.
Same. Yeah, I absolutely love it as well.
Yeah. Every week I'm like, what new crazy idea are we going to spin up live? You know?
Well, also I'm happy because I really don't feel like there's any extra overhead with the show other than doing the hour and a half we talk. Because any discussion we have outside of the show, we would naturally have anyway. Any kind of like testing of BitChat or this new app or that new app or whatever, or vibe coding, whatever, we're already doing it anyway. So I just like that it's like almost no extra overhead. We learn a lot in the show. We've created, you know, generated tons of new ideas that we actually put into action too.
Yeah.
And
builders, I think probably the most actionable.
And then audience members get ideas or get motivated and it changes their lives too. Like we had Andy from Buenos Aires listen to the show, learned that he could work out of Presidio Bitcoin for a period of time.
That's right.
Now he's here and he's here for 5 months.
He's a cool dude. What up,
Andy?
He's
great.
Yeah, yeah.
We've also learned, I believe he's at the top of the leaderboard on pull-ups as well. Let's talk pull-ups and Boldy.
All right.
So we talked about pull-ups, I think last show.
Yep.
And we have at least 7 people at Presidio Bitcoin who are in the double digit club for maximum number of pull-ups. So I think that's pretty phenomenal. Max is one of them.
I have yet to post new numbers this week. So I apologize. I'm behind. I need to grab.
Oh, you haven't even posted your numbers. So then we have at least 8 because I saw firsthand you can do at least 15. So
proof of the pull.
Even our funder, Mark Casey.
Seriously, Mark was here doing pull-ups?
He came in for the board meeting.
We do
a quarterly board meeting for Presidio Bitcoin.
Go, Mark.
And he heard about our pull-up, culture on the last show.
All right.
And he came in and he's in the double digit club.
I'm impressed. Nice. I mean, to be fair, Mark definitely looks like he's in shape. Mark, if you're listening, you definitely look like you're in shape, man. But double digits, like...
He's an old dude like me.
I didn't say it, but...
Sorry, Mark. I can say it because I'm also...
I was going to be nice about it, yo.
I'm an old dude, too.
It's impressive.
Yeah. So young, old, we're all doing double digits here.
Yeah.
And then yesterday, Alex, our lead and our producer for the show... he organized a social event for members and we went over to the Presidio Bowl, which is like a 2-minute walk from Presidio Bitcoin, and we did bowling and Max bailed on us. I don't know.
I'm sorry, guys. I'm sorry.
Anyway, it was a lot of fun. Everyone had fun.
Any hidden talents?
Well, I believe almost all of us play like once every few years.
Okay.
Right?
We're all the same kids.
So we had no like 200 bowlers. There were a couple. Austin and Alex stood out. They scored at least 130, I think. Pretty. Mm-hmm. That's solid showing. And then everyone else is just, can you get to 100? But I think everyone was trending better. Like we were rusty, right? Like the first 5-6 frames, like, and bowled in several years. Yeah. So Haley in particular, she bowled like a 50 total score for the first round, which is, not that great a score.
Yeah.
Then we were able to, given the time limits, we were only able to bowl like 4 or 5 more frames in the second game.
Yeah.
And she already had like 80.
Oh, damn. Go Haley.
So she was like going to soar past 100.
Yeah. I'm not surprised. I mean, Haley definitely attention to detail. I feel like you need that for...
Yeah, it's good. And we saw... Leo improved dramatically from beginning to end. Anyway, we need to do it more frequently.
Do the French have bowling?
I don't know.
Well,
they have patonk, but that's exactly. Not really bowling.
It's much classier, of course. Yeah, I felt bad that I had to bail. Just, I had an Indian music concert that was planned. So it was very cool. I also went hooping with a bunch of teenagers yesterday beforehand. So I was very exhausted and I felt like the old man. So We're all old, relatively speaking.
Everything's relative.
Exactly.
But that's our athletic update. Although DK is like walking an insane number of steps.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think the reason we kicked off in the group chat about all these accomplishments is I was quite proud that I kind of inadvertently had walked more than 10 miles a day for a few days in a row. And then I was like, actually, let's get a whole week out of this. So I managed to do a whole week, ended last night, of 10 miles per day.
All right.
And now, so like, in running, a 70 mile week would be like insane. That's like, a big, big week. But now I'm kind of like into it. Like, do I keep just going? Do I do that again today?
Yeah. Why would you stop?
I don't know. Kind of gives me old man vibes.
Oh, wow.
Bragging about walking steps.
Back in my day, I used to do 15 miles a day. Barefoot.
Given that Max is such a big walker, I wanted to understand, does this sort of get into the range of competitive with Max's typical
you want me to
weekly...
check?
Yeah.
All right. By the way, shout out to DK.
I know you walk everywhere, right?
I do. I'm a big walker. DK, he convinced me, or he showed me live back when we were sporadic podcasters on Noster News. I had no idea that the iPhone had a feature.
I think Elon is a big walker too, right? Didn't you and Elon?
Yeah. Okay.
You used to do a lot of walking.
Yeah, we used to urban hike everywhere.
Urban hike.
Yeah. A little bit less this week, actually. A little bit less. So I am currently, let's see. Actually, no. If we count through Thursday, because today's too early to count. Average steps 18,669. So still up there. Still up there. But I think you're probably getting there.
You guys' numbers are impressive.
I walk a lot. So does DK.
I mean, Max made me drive my car over to his house to test if he could get a car like mine into his garage. Because he doesn't have a car.
I don't have a car, yeah. I would love that.
I think the answer would no.
just waiting for the new Elon Roadster that could fit in there. That would be sick.
Should we chat? Bit chat? Bitch.
Let's chat. Do you want to?
Bitch ass. Bitch ass.
I looked for the domain bitchat.me.
That's a good idea.
Bitch at me. But
bitch at, ooh.
But it's taken.
Oh, so I like that idea.
And well, I learned that someone nabbed bitchat.com before Jack or Callie or someone could.
Probably Ben Ark. He's always there first. One last thing before we chat into BitChat, one request for proposal, since we're always doing this at our product nights.
Yeah.
I've been asking for this product for many, many months now, but I was sparked listening to you guys talk about how swole we all are here at the Presidio Bitcoin. And I still want a meme generator, a very simple meme generator where I can generate memes, kind of like Image Flip or whatever, but get zapped in Bitcoin or in eCash, share it on Noster easily. Lemon, he kind of did my little bounty and made some version of that. But like, I would love to see someone make this awesome. Actually, there's a real opportunity there. I just couldn't help seeing in my mind, I'm not exactly sure what the meme is. So a call to the audience to both give the meme generator and the meme. But as we talk about the Bitcoiners sitting here doing double digit pull-ups into advanced age, as you said.
Almost senior citizen.
I can't imagine. But seeing some kind of meme in there where that's contrasted with a certain Ethereum leader dancing on stage. I think there's a meme in there somewhere. I'm just going to leave that to the audience to figure out, but I would love to see that. I would zap it.
Well, Max, if you want to show us proof of work,
I should trust do that. Me,
you could actually build this thing before the day is over.
You really believe that?
I believe you could do this before the day is over. I would say lean on Matt a little bit and you start with Replit and you can do this entire idea end to end and have it deployed. A public URL before the end of today.
Today, probably challenging, but I can set aside one afternoon next week.
See what Matt returns from vacation mid next week.
Perfect. That's a good
challenge. I'll also tell you, speaking of being swole, you can vibe code on Replit from your mobile phone.
Are you serious?
Which I do.
While you're working out?
I'll go to the gym. I'll do a set. In between sets, I'll dispatch a new task to Replit. And so you could do it while you're walking. You could do it while you're at the gym.
Yep.
It's amazing. I feel like this is life-changing technology. The biggest deal in technology since I've been alive, 40 years since I've been involved in technology. As a kid, I was playing around, right?
So DK is revealing his age too.
Let's talk about another vibe coded app.
Let's do it.
BitChat.
Okay. Bitch app.
Do you want to set it up? Who wants to set it up? Steve.
Well, I figured it was on July 4th, July 1st, but this month, early this month, Jack Dorsey announced BitChat, an app, the latest app that he's vibe coded. And it sounded pretty compelling. It's a mobile app. He launched it on iPhone. It's a chat app. It works over Bluetooth, low energy, does not require the internet. It forms a mesh network around you. So implied with that, you can't chat with just anyone in the world. They have to be nearby you. Mm. Within, you know, it depends on interference and barriers, but, you know, 30 meters or so. We tested it here at Presidio Bitcoin. Leo's on one end, I's on the other end. You're still able to chat. That was just a direct connection, but it also forms a mesh network. So I think you can go seven or so hops away.
Wow.
And there's both group chat, which is like public group chat within the people who are within proximity, and private chat that you can form, you know, that you can do with anyone who's within proximity. Mm-hmm. So I think that's the, and there's a few other cool features initially. There's like signal-like verification. So if I want to confirm that the identity I'm messaging with on this app is actually Max and I see Max, we can confirm the
fingerprint.
The fingerprint, thank you. Like signal. You can favorite people. And then there's some fun interactions, like you can hug someone or slap
Steve
someone.
Steve slapped me and Bob with a fish, man. I couldn't find the fish, but
yeah. So a little bit of fun in there as well. So that's the initial applications. So let's definitely talk about like use cases of this. But then there's also been new features already added. We can talk about that. There's a roadmap, and then we can let our imaginations run wild as well about what we'd want to see with this. Unlike other vibe coded apps I've seen from Jack or others, this one really seemed to resonate. It's like top 200 in the App Store. Jack posted distribution numbers of users, and there's like lots of users in Russia, Ukraine, and US. And there's like a Fortune magazine article that covered it.
Yeah,
today as well.
I have a trillion questions, ideas about this. Maybe two things to start. Number one, I know we haven't mentioned Nostr yet, and that's part of the new feature set. So that's something we're definitely going to talk a lot about. But the fact that BitChat already has over 100,000 downloads or whatever, like it in and of itself is very interesting to me. But as like a meta point, I just want to note, at least in my mind, even if no one else gets good at vibe coding, and of course, we already know that's not the case. We already have DK and Matt and Steve's getting better. Like, and maybe one day I will. Like, even if all we ever get is now Jack Dorsey is able to ship Nostr apps at a quick cadence. This was like, I know he's got at least one other out there. He had that sun tracking app. Like, this is like a couple weeks. Like, there's no way this is more than like a month of work as far as I'm aware. Like, to be clear, Jack is probably the product goat, at least of our generation, certainly up there with like a Steve Jobs and Elon Musk. The fact that he can now vibe code and just drop apps quickly, to me, makes me so much more bullish on Nostr than I ever have been. Like, we're going to talk about how he's kind of like purple pilling people secretly in here, but the fact that Jack can now drop, I don't know, an app a month. And then, oh, by the way, everyone else in the community, the Callies of the world, the DKs, the Mats, are also going to be able to drop. Like, this is going to spin out of control quickly. I have never been more bullish on Nostr than I am seeing BitChat go viral, and it's like one of his first two apps he's dropped.
Yeah, I think he did do it in like a weekend. And I think he's leading by example. I don't think we're only going to have Jack creating apps.
I agree.
I think we're going to have many, many people. There's lots of smart people around the world with great ideas, many of whom didn't have Jack's programming background, so could never realize them.
Right.
Wherein, you know, historically, Jack was able to traditionally program. To realize his vision. Now people with really good visions, really good ideas can do it as well. And I think he's doing a great job leading by example.
Yeah. And to be clear, even with him, I mean, I'm sure we would have gotten a lot more apps over the last 20 years if he hadn't had to like run public companies and stuff. Like, just coding in general is like a laborious, tedious project. But the fact that now people that have really good product instincts, or maybe who knows, maybe one day all of us will develop great product instincts and start dropping apps like that, like just like bringing that barrier down. It's kind of like what we said many times in the show. It's going to make the experts and the wizards like 100x more productive, and anyone can at least enter the chat now. So the fact that it's all going to be done, I believe, with Nostr and with Bitcoin and Bitcoin related stuff like eCash in the background, I've never been more bullish on Bitcoin and Nostr products than I am right now. So.
But Max, the big takeaway is lead by example. Show us.
I hear you. I hear you. To be fair, I've had another big project I'm working on that you guys are aware of, which we'll talk about at some point, involving photons. But eventually, yes.
Yeah. So if you get stuck, let me know.
So we should be talking about use cases. Let's talk about connectivity and internet and Nostr and going beyond proximity. What does that look like? Payments, vibe coding, and you want to talk about solar or something. So we have all kinds of things to talk about here. But let's start with use cases.
Yeah.
And maybe let's just start with the initial application that's only mesh network proximity.
Yep.
So anyone trying this app out at first, if they download it at home, their initial experience is going to be quite poor, likely, because they'll literally see
no one else,
no messages, and they can't really do anything. So that's a bad initial user experience. So where would this be a better user experience? And I think I've at least heard or thought of at least a dozen different things, but maybe I'll let you guys start.
Well, there was a service called FireChat from a company called Open Garden that was launched, I don't know, maybe 7, 8, 10 years ago. And it was a very similar type of, Bluetooth mesh networking service. And this was, it kind of bubbled along for, I think, a few years. And then I think during the Hong Kong riots, it really took off because there was a problem with, people in the streets needing to communicate and some restrictions around, I think, internet connectivity and a lot of control that the government was trying to enforce upon the people. So I think that, just like a protest is a specific use case where we already have seen very large scale adoption of this kind of product. But I think there's just tons of use cases. Like when I saw the stats that you mentioned around Russia having a lot of downloads, it reminded me, I used to collaborate with a guy who lived in Russia, and he showed me a picture of his home, and they live in this very stacked vertical apartment complex where everybody, maybe it's 40 or 50 stories, but everybody's in close proximity. And you could imagine that a situation like that, if there's lots of those, people maybe want to have the ability to communicate with everybody who's in their apartment complex with them, and imagine kind of those, if you can do 7 hops, that could be a really great use case. So it wouldn't surprise me if maybe there's existing kind of Ukraine and Russia, areas where people feel oppressed and limited in their communication, or just maybe convenient to connect people that are nearby in ways that we don't necessarily live our own lives there. And then there's kind of, rural communities that are maybe disconnected or maybe off the grid. So those are at least a few of the things that come to mind for me.
Let's talk about the apartment building example. I don't even know if it requires an oppression, oppressive government.
It doesn't. Yeah.
It might just be it guarantees you that these are people nearby. Now, it doesn't guarantee you that it's tenants of the apartment building, but if you're I'm going to go play tennis, right?
Yeah.
And you just post that, and then you know that it's going to people nearby. Well, that might be valuable.
Or if it's 3 a.m. and someone's blaring their speakers and you're I don't know who the fuck this is, but turn that off. Valuable.
Yeah.
So I have a slightly different take on where I think this is going to pop off. So I think that's a very interesting use case. I think the protest is definitely one. I mean, I will say it did say at least in the first version, maybe this has changed in the last version. There's still a lot of cryptography testing and stuff that needs to be done. So if you're actually in a super whatever, for your life, HRF type situation, probably, let it mature a bit.
Also, to interject, but another thing is governments can pollute the spectrum as well and block, they can jam Bluetooth.
Yeah.
So it's still a good tool to have available, but it's not bulletproof against a government.
At least not yet. to me, though, because I was talking with folks who are less, let's say, down the like sovereignty, Bitcoin, Nostr rabbit hole and asking, and they're like, this is kind of cool, but like, why would any normal person ever use this unless they're like in an oppressive regime or whatever? And the first thing that I caught that came to mind, again, another potential vibe coded opportunity here. I should do this with VO. I know, DK, but I can just see the BitChat like app with like the, what is it? OT, the Genesis, like Coco or something. I basically think this is going to like take off. I would not endorsing, just like an observation, going to be like Bitcoin with the sort of gray area use cases. I think like drug dealing at festivals is going to be huge. Or festivals in general, right? Just like chatting with people at festivals. But the fact that you, in theory, have these privacy concerns as well, it's like, hey, I'm at this festival, ran out of, you know, the honey that I'm looking for. Anyone know any honey dealers around here? Yeah, I think that's how the normie, you know, Instagram crowd comes in.
I believe Outside Lands is coming up soon.
Exactly.
So we think we're going to
see maybe there? Because, if it's released, it won't be under my name.
At Golden Gate Park tonight.
What is?
You know, Dead & Co.
Oh, yeah. The Grateful Dead.
They're performing at Golden Gate Park tonight. You should roll by the park with your bitch hat and see if you can find some honey.
Certainly won't be me if the feds are listening. Don't worry.
Yeah, so I agree. I think that's a very good fit for a use case. Sorry, DK, you were going to say something?
Yeah, I was going to say, I think maybe it gets a little bit into another part of the discussion, but when I see a kind of a new idea like this, I'm off, you know, I think it almost like should feel a little awkward. Like anything that's really good and new should feel limited in ways and kind of awkward ways. And so I like to try to understand what it is today and then kind of like, what are the assumptions? What does that newly enable? What are its limits? What does that break? So one of the things I was trying to figure out is what is this? Is it mostly around location centric? There's kind of this privacy thing to it, or kind of anonymity or pseudonymity to it. That feels like a primitive that's part of what this is. And then the nature of being able to favorite somebody feels like it changes the fundamental like limitations that felt like they're part of the early design. So I'm trying to think through what does that imply about where this could go, or kind of what it sort of flexes out to try to serve. Have you guys played with that favorites feature yet?
Funny you mentioned.
We were debugging it right before the show. That's why we were a few minutes late.
Oh, you were.
So because there's a brand new release a few hours ago that includes Nostr and NIP 17, which allows you to meet someone who's nearby, mutually favorite each other, and then when you part ways and aren't physically proximate, then you can continue chatting over Nostr. So I was told we were supposed to see a purple globe. And we
did not.
We don't yet see a purple globe. So after the show,
we'll get there.
We will figure it out.
And so is the whole purpose of favoriting somebody, you're kind of like saving them, but you're doing it in a one way. So I could favorite you, but you might not favorite me back.
Yeah. Right? And this only what he's talking about. So to be clear, when you're chatting just on the mesh, it's all going through Bluetooth to Bluetooth. So if you leave, there's no more messaging. The genius of this, and this is why I think it's Jack clearly has a plan with this, is version one didn't even mention the word Nostr. However, version two, the purple release today, if we double opt-in, so it requires double opt-in, I have to star Steve, he has to star me, then in theory, when we go home, now all of a sudden we use Nostr relays to do the encrypted message, like DMs back and forth. So that's like genius because, I mean, and to your kind of question on this, like where does this go? I mean, I think there's a million things this could go with, but like one thing is like, it encourages people to like, I don't know, like get off the fucking internet and be friends and like meet up in real life and then actually like make friends and keep chatting with them.
Another use case is dating, right? You meet someone in person, you mutually opt in, and then you can stay connected once you leave, right?
I didn't even think of that.
Remember Paul's start, like before you had Highlight or Highlighter, Paul had it.
He had a Highlight, yeah.
Highlight, right? And this is 2011? Or so,
yeah,
era.
Yep.
And the Notion by NetApp was it was location based, so like anyone who's using the app to opt in, shows people nearby. So in some ways similar, but a different feel to it than this app. It might be good. It might be interesting for us to like analyze that. But it never really took off.
Why do you guys think it didn't take off?
Well, I think one of the problems that was a big struggle back in the day was the method of connectivity to the people around you. The sort of way to identify is through GPS. And in 2011, I think that sounds about right. The battery management was really tough. So managing a background app to be able to get GPS and then managing to have that background app not consume most of your battery, the way battery management in iOS work was a real challenge. So, you know, so here we are, whatever, 14 years later, and BLE is a very different technology than GPS. And so it might, I don't know all the limitations or restrictions around how it can or can't run in the background. But that's like BLE is like a very different approach to that kind of thing. Actually, speaking of BLE, do you remember, and Steve and our friends who worked on these startups, do you remember Carlos had worked on a BLE messaging tool? Like,
and it was a nightmare at the time. And Strava app also has always been a nightmare trying to use BLE. I mean, Bluetooth protocol stacks have always been like relatively flaky, especially Android. But I assume they've matured over the last 10 years.
Yeah. What changed? Because I think someone was even showing on Noster, they were showing Jack saying like Bluetooth is like horrible to work with or something 2 years ago. So I wondered, like, did something update in the stack in the last 2 years? Did he find some new hack that made it easier?
I don't know. It's definitely historically been a real pain and super flaky. But maybe iOS and Android finally they got their act together.
The thing that, I mean, your point on dating is a good one. I guess any app to be successful either needs to be for drug dealer or dating, and this might be both. The way I see this, though, even outside of that, just like friends or whatever, is like, I really think that there's something beautiful. I think there's a seed of something beautiful here, which is, you know, as agents and everything takes more of our attention online and more people go to the, like, you know, Zuck putting the giant glasses on your head and you sitting in the metaverse. I think this plants the seed for the exact opposite of that, which encourages you to just like go into the real world, take trips, meet people, do things. And then the internet is kind of like this like sort of background enabling piece, which is nice because it enhances the IRL like real world experience. But my hope, and this is where I've always hoped Noster's going to go. And again, you know, Noster's been kind of cool with the Twitter experience, but obviously that's just the entree to the appetizer to the entree, which is yet to come. But somehow, my hope for technology over the next decade is that it is in the background while we live a more IRL solar punk life. And this to me is like very much in that ethos.
Yeah. I agree. I think one of the observations I was making, I think I made it first in our chat, but then I posted a public note. I said, favoriting someone you meet on BitChat is a form of proof of personhood, a potential way to rebuild the internet with more clarity around who is real versus a bot. We've talked before about like the dystopian WorldCoin approach to trying to identify who is a person and who is a bot. And we've sort of expressed our distaste in that style. But this is actually a form of proof of personhood, because if I see you and know you in person and I favorite you and you mutually favorite, now I kind of have a different type of internet. And maybe initially we're using it for private chat or groups or local chat, but maybe it could extend that to, like, I think we're already seeing with the NIP 17 Noster thing, you extend it to an internet of people in a different way. And so it's an internet that probably it's tougher for bots to sneak their way in to that experience. You get a lot more certainty around like who it is that you're interacting with.
Yeah, I'd say that's one of the more bullish things that I've heard recently about Noster.
Yeah.
Because it really does seem like a strong contender, BitChat plus Noster, to proving that you're human versus something like WorldCoin.
Yeah, I could not agree more. And again, it's in a bottoms up, decentralized, non-authoritarian way. I think it's awesome. And we've talked
no token as well. No pre-mined token.
No token, no iris scan necessary. So that's always a plus. I do think, I mean, two thoughts come to mind immediately. One, you know, there was that tweet, I think Balaji made a tweet a couple of weeks ago where he was saying like, you know, IRL, not IRL, like person only social networks are going to be a really big thing. And then I sort of made the comment back where I was like, well, I don't see any way to do that without either Nostr Web of Trust or Scan the Iris. And he liked that. So it seems like he was actually kind of thinking along those ways. I had not yet thought of this like peer-to-peer thing. But the beauty of this is it's also the basis of other kinds of webs of trust. And we've talked a lot about web of trust on here. First is like proof of personhood. But you could imagine this could go on to so many other kinds of things. Like you could layer on top of that, I mean, both sort of explicitly and implicitly through AI things like, hey, like if we met, you know, at, I don't know, like, I don't know how this would be layered in. It could just be like, you know, based on the date and the GPS location of where you were. But if we met at Presidio Bitcoin, that says a certain kind of thing about the person. If they were sitting here talking, you know, on the builder night. Okay, well, that's like a really interesting heuristic that you can start saying this person is likely more Bitcoin or likely more orange pilled. What you can do with the web of trust from proof of personhood to all kinds of like niche things we haven't thought of yet, that's going to be cool.
So another use case is like merchants. And I think it was Grubles or not Grubles or whatever his name is, tweeted out that like at a conference, you might have a vendor booth with like a giveaway. They give out like eCash and they publish that, and then it only reaches people who are within, you know, proximity of that vendor booth, and it would attract people to that booth. I think that's interesting.
That's cool.
You can also imagine like at a farmer's market or any kind of like a truck, you know, food truck area, things like that, or any kind of food court. You could see commerce being promoted there as well. I mean, we should talk about spam as well, though. Like what if spammers just like completely flooded that public channel?
Yeah.
And then how do you address that abuse?
But
at least starting with the use case, I think that's another potentially compelling use case.
Well, and one thing on there, actually, now that you say this, like if I were to like kind of bet where I could see this developing to a really interesting startup opportunity, I don't know if Jack will do this through the company or maybe someone else could do this. Maybe Jeff and Max, what they're working on with White Noise already. So one of the killer apps that I've been wanting to see on Nostr forever is local Bitcoins, right? So just peer-to-peer Bitcoin for cash transactions. And I think the key to getting something like a local Bitcoins really working is having that be on an encrypted messenger. I thought it was probably going to be from, you know, the Primals of the world first. And obviously because it's all interoperable, they could feed into this. But BitChat actually seems like the most credible starting place I've seen, because now, I mean, you could literally do it like in person. Although eventually, you know, or, you know, maybe you could have like mutual opt-in, like, hey, I haven't met you in person yet, but Steve opts you in so you can still pass your whatever Nostr keys to me. All of a sudden you can build all kinds of commerce on top of this. And we haven't talked about this. I don't think there's like a live release of this yet, but we were talking with Damien and Bob a little bit about sort of eCash coming into this thing. But if you have private money backed by Bitcoin that you can actually send to someone over private commerce, all of a sudden, like, I mean, that's like one of the most bullish things for freedom, for Bitcoin, like actually being, you know, a medium of exchange I've ever seen. Peer-to-peer commerce with private communications. That seems pretty unstoppable.
Yep. I agree. Let's talk about some of the different payment forms. And also, Callie just had a really good podcast on Citadel Dispatch with Matt O'Dell.
Yesterday?
So, 2 days ago. Yeah. I've listened to the whole thing. It's like an hour, 50 minutes long, but it's really good. Anyone interested in BitChat or anything we're talking about should definitely check out Citadel Dispatch.
Also, just shout out, like, Callie, you know, we've talked a few times in the show about people that just really always push the field forward. We've talked about Pierre. I think Ben has done that, Ben Ark a little bit. Callie is definitely one of those like super like 1000x thinkers, coders, delivers. Like if you look at all kinds of stuff, you know, he was early in pushing Ellen Bits out there. He was early in pushing the Telegram bot for Lightning payments, early in at creating and shipping Cashew, making all of this possible. Like that dude is one of the like 100x guys.
He's also like a positive force.
Yeah. I mean,
he's not a hater.
No, like, he's a good guy.
A lot of people get, you know, eCash people hate on Lightning, or Lightning people hate on eCash. And like Callie sees the good in Lightning. He sees the good in eCash. He also sees the drawbacks, isn't, you know, afraid to admit it. Sees the good of Nostr and, you know, anyway. But by the way,
on Callie, if I understand right, it was just a few days after Jack first did kind of the first prototype that Callie came in and did like an Android version. Is that right?
Yeah, he describes I'll summarize what he talks about in the podcast, okay. But he was not aware that Jack was building this. So he didn't have like, knowledge ahead of time. He saw it when the rest of us saw it announced. And then he got to work on an Android version because Jack built a Swift iOS version. He said he used Goose and Claude Sonnet 4 primarily. He did have to do some hand coding, the noise protocol. The LLM wasn't able to handle that, but mostly vibe coded.
Wow, I didn't know that.
And but yeah, so Callie learned about it, picked it up right away, and you know, within like half a day, had an initial Android version. And he describes this process. It's similar to what, you know, we've discussed before. You know, he was really more, even though Callie's a very competent traditional programmer, he sort of put his PM hat on and just instructed the LLM, here's what I want, and just wrote up a plan, and here's what I want, and very meticulous, step by step, and was able to quickly build a working Android version. And he also said, similar to Jack, that like noise protocol needed some hand coding, and he had to look at code and stuff like that. So someone who doesn't know how to code probably couldn't have fully done this, but could have gotten a long ways. But yeah, he's blown away by what he can do. And I thought he shared a really interesting point. A lot of startups use React Native, or more recent in the past few years, Flutter. If they want to support both iPhone and Android.
Yeah.
Because if, you know, if you're a startup pre-funding, or you only have seed funding, you have like one dev, it's like very difficult to build and maintain two separate native code bases, Swift and Kotlin. But that's changed. It's changed. I obviously, they just demonstrated it with BitChat, how they were able to quickly build both native code bases and get an app out there.
It's cool.
And see if the app's interesting, see if there's product market fit. And I think long term, like if it is a popular app and the code base does grow and features grow, we're still at a point where you need traditional programmers, you need humans, and they're going to do hand coding. And Callie even points that out. Like basically, as time goes on, code base grows, complexity grows, LLMs get confused and start not being able to hand manage it anymore. Or if you get into
for now,
yeah. But to get going, you know, to I mean, obviously they just proved that you can use an LLM and you can have native code, so you get the best of both worlds: move fast, get on both platforms, but also deliver really native, excellent user experiences for users.
I like, by the way, that you're calling it. Oh, sorry, I was just gonna say, okay. I like that you're calling it hand coding. It already sounds like we're in that position where it's like, oh, like the artisanal, like this is, you know, authentic, organic, that, you know.
I believe Jack literally speaks his English vibe coding.
Really?
He doesn't type it. So
that's awesome.
I think he is literally hands-free building these applications.
Wow.
It's a way to do it. I mean, that was the original Karpathy vibe code. You know, the tweet that defined vibe coding says that he used his Super Whisper as a Mac OS app so he can speak to the thing. So that's kind of
cool.
True to form of the art. Yeah.
DK, were you going to say something or not?
Yeah, I wanted to, one of the questions I was asking in the chat that I don't think I ever quite fully digested, it touches on this kind of Callie kind of directional thing, is, you know, obviously BLE is a transport protocol, but when you move up to the layer of BitChat, is BitChat meant to be a messaging protocol, or is it more like a messaging app? And now Callie can build the Android version of that same messaging app. But you know, for example, if Max wanted to build the local Bitcoins idea that he's been excited about for a long time, and he sees this as a good substrate, does he have to contribute like a feature, like, you know, raise a pull request into the main repo of BitChat, or can he launch a separate app that intends to use the messaging layer of BitChat, but doesn't necessarily need to be part of that product experience?
You should ask Grok right now.
Well, I did ask it, and I have
the
not,
new. Let me Google that for you, bro.
Is it more like a protocol or an app? And it says BitChat is primarily an app, but operates using a protocol like decentralized architecture that leverages DLE mesh networking.
My understanding is it was already using from day one the white noise protocol, I think. I may have that wrong, but if that's the case, then actually, I don't know. Does that mean that BitChat is already interoperable with what Jeff and Max are working on with white noise and their sort of implementation? I guess I don't know if that speaks.
I don't know. But we do know, though, is that the iPhone and Android app are compatible with each other. They achieve compatibility. And I think, I mean, it's using the noise protocol, just DLE. They've now added NIP 17 as another way protocol to communicate. But as far as other protocols or platforms for third parties to build stuff, I don't know.
The other thing that's going to be, it's a good question, DK, and something we should figure out for next week. Because like, yeah, I it would be really cool. Again, my sort of vision for the local Bitcoins thing has always been, it's not just one company, but imagine you have like, I don't know, like 100 different local Bitcoins, but they all have a shared order book or a potential for a shared order book. That's really interesting to me. The other thing though, with the Nostra integration is, I guess like in theory, I mean, I think someone was mentioning this, that like one of the next releases hopefully will be, you could just like swap out your keys. So you could just add Nostra keys. Like one big question I have is, why are the original keys in BitChat not just Nostra keys already? I think they're very similar. I don't know. I'd be curious, you know, maybe Jack has some good thinking around that and maybe he'll explain it on Primal or something, or Nostra. But regardless, if you can then swap in your Nostra keys, then that gets super powerful, because then you've already got the whatever 100,000 plus people that are using Primal and Domus daily and Amethyst, et cetera, that can now talk with all these new people very easily.
But in a sense, that kind of breaks a little bit of the contract that the new system is establishing.
Why? Right?
Well, if you have a bunch of mutual follows, you might not have been super discerning about who you mutually followed on Nostr. But BitChat is in a sense like a graph reset. So I don't know the details of how it's meant to, like how those relationships are meant to be stored. Are they stored on Nostr? Are they stored locally on your, I assume they're probably stored locally on your device, because I think there's a bunch of local storage that you can wipe. I think I read something about a triple tap to wipe your local storage in case you're under duress or something. So my guess is those relationships are some sort of like a hash that, you know, you notice again when it discovers the person, but it's not otherwise like a strongly linked identity, and certainly not a public one.
Well, my guess though is that what I'm talking about will be optional. And I mean, maybe it's a good idea not to combine them at all, but I have to think that if it's tapping into Nostr and we already have this kind of like hot network effect going, it would be better. Like, and maybe you do it where you just like put in your new keys. Like I could just drop my Nostr keys that I use on Primal now, or maybe there's some like mapping function where it's like, you know, I can keep the same keys I have on BitChat, but when I want to opt in and also start sending, you know, NIP 17 messages and eventually other kinds of Nostr events, then I could access both.
Right.
But I don't know what the plan is going to be, but I mean, it's a good question.
Let's talk a little bit about like connectivity. So starting with the mesh network, I mean, one thing that I believe is the case, at least on iOS, the app has to be in the, you don't get a guarantee that it's going to be running in the background. So if your phone's in your pocket, it's unlikely to like forward a message that it receives onto the next node in the mesh network. So that's a gotcha that I really haven't seen spoken about too much, or at all, really. But I do believe it employs a store and forward architecture. So if your phone does receive a message, it can hold it until like the next node that it wants to send to comes back online. So I'd like to see like real world experience or data on that to see how well the mesh network actually works. Android should be much better. Android, you generally get better background access for an app. So this also might be location dependent too. I mean, like Android has much higher market share globally.
Right.
So certain geographies, if it's dominant Android, maybe this is like a non-problem. Or even like in the US or Japan or whatever, iPhone's pretty dominant. You know, what's the threshold? Maybe if there's like 10 or 20% of the users that have Android, that's sufficient to have a successful mesh network. That's one thing I wanted to note. Now, we're talking excited about Nostr, but let's just talk about the regular internet too. meaning, you know, as long as one node on the mesh is connected to the internet, mm-hmm. then anyone on that mesh could connect to the internet.
Yeah.
I think I read or heard that's on the roadmap, but not exactly sure. I think that could be compelling. Now that node that's basically acting as a hotspot would have to be either on Android running in the background or keep their app open on the iPhone. It could drain their battery. So there's some practical...
You consume their practical bandwidth depending on what their data plan looks like.
Yeah. So there's a bunch of practical things there. But nonetheless, for a lot of these use cases, like, so what?
Okay. So one of the first things that popped in my mind when I started thinking about the implications of this. So do you guys remember there was the GoTenna mesh network and they were trying to do lightning payments? This was like 2018 or 2019. This was forever ago. And I remember reading this and just being like super fascinated, but it was like very hobbyist, like no adoption, but it was like super cool in theory. Then I've recommended this many times, you know, Drew Bansal's 2018 blockchain mind candy talk, one of the best talks in Bitcoin of all time. And he talks a lot about basically establishing, you know, mesh. He basically talks about like new kinds of mesh networks, basically like with Lightning Network, the ability to meter in real time and pay for bandwidth, storage, and compute, all of the resources that we use. And his big thing is he's like, yeah, and then you're going to have these entrepreneurs and have to go out there and like take all of this bandwidth and sell it. And it was like, yeah, it's always like, I think you directionally, he's super right. But like how we get there was never clear to me. Maybe this is how we get there. So to your point, imagine like, okay, so there could be people with their phones in the background and like, well, you know, they've got a fat data plan, or maybe someone comes and sets up a specific node, just at proceed of Bitcoin. And how would they solve who gets to send a message? Oh, I don't know. Wish there was a solution for that. Like a market.
Yep.
Is it the Helium? Is that the startup with the token and stuff? Yes. This feels like a way to achieve that without tokens and stuff.
Yeah.
It's basically like a pop-up enterprise. It's a pop-up one-person small business.
Yep.
And they just show up at outside lands, or they show up at conferences or events. And yeah, all the concerns I mentioned about background and battery and stuff, you'd have a setup where you have plenty of power.
Yep. You could drop a Starlink.
It's a dedicated system to providing connectivity.
Like Black Rock City or Coachella, and you bring a Starlink, and you become just like a spot entrepreneur.
You're an entrepreneur. It's like literally like the dudes that are selling hot dogs,
and you're paid with Bitcoin
or honey.
Same
thing.
Bitcoin.
Same thing.
That's just the technology detail. Yeah.
At least you didn't say SATs.
I mean, you could use Lightning too. I mean, that's one thing we can get into. Like, there's so much excitement about eCash, but like, I don't see why Lightning can't be used in this situation either. So,
but again, I mean, to me, the really, really, really critical thing is when you're thinking about how to achieve the like bottoms up decentralized version of the world. I know we all want to see. The beauty is, you give people the tools, and then you just let it go wild, like. Anyone, like, how will we solve this problem? It's like, because at the edge, there will always be someone who says, I can go acquire a fatter data plan. I can go and build, mm-hmm. like, one of the things you said I wanted to mention, because I saw this cool tweet. I think Jack shared this one on Twitter. Someone's already trying to run a, whatever they're calling it, bit mesh node or whatever, powered by solar. And you could imagine you literally, like, to your point, maybe it's powered by solar, you know, tapping into Starlink, and you've got, you know, whatever, massive bandwidth in the middle of Burning Man or whatever. And like, yeah, you're making a lot of money. And then it's like, well, everyone else sees you're making a lot of money. So they come, it's just free markets. Then more people say, well, I want to come sell my hot dog. I want to come sell my bandwidth. And all of a sudden, like, just bottoms up intelligence solves everything. Man, this is, this is cool. This is cool.
Let's talk a little bit about, so we're clearly going to see people tapping into the regular internet. We're talking about Nostr. So I see with Nostr this proof of human and the identity piece and the private messaging once you are no longer near each other. I see all that. But what about just like connectivity to information? Mm. Can you guys speak to like why Nostr over the internet? Why the internet over Nostr?
What do you mean? In what context?
Well, meaning like if you... I mean, with Nostr only, mm-hmm. you could tap into content and information without TCP/IP.
Okay.
Right? So is there a world...
Maybe that's
where well, is there a world where that's giving unique advantages over the internet?
I mean, short term, I don't think it's going to be either or. I think it's going to be both. But like to be clear, in the long run, the advantage of Nostr is just like more choice on the back end, right? And the ability to potentially have services that are listed like just with their EnPub. So that means a lot more uncensorable or like free services. I think that's probably the world we're headed like on a decade plus or maybe multi-decade time horizon. But I think in the short run, we'll do both. You'll connect to like the traditional, the old world internet is not going to die overnight. It's going to be a multi-decade long thing. And yeah, I mean, if you want to tap in and use, you know, Twitter or the legacy services, go for it. But in the meanwhile, I think you'll also see like every service you could access on the internet and plus all kinds of wild ones also popping up just with EnPubs, which is also super important because, you know, as the old internet, like we've talked in the past, the old internet is going to drown and die with AI spam. Well, now we're watching this week, like they're requiring KYC to like access like basic news services. Now, like the old internet is kind of fucked. And so I think increasingly the more pressure is put on to like ID people in the name of terrorism or child safety or whatever they're wrapping it up with this week, the more people start looking for the alternative services get better. But I don't think it's either or short term, but long run, I'm bullish on EnPubs.
And I think it isn't Cloudflare. I thought I heard that Cloudflare has a new type of service for who they allow to crawl stuff, that they're kind of like a pay per crawl or something.
They talk about it, I don't know if it's
live. They're kind of throttling some of the, because of a lot of the value of crawling for AI training. So they're kind of throttling that or sort of creating a little bit of a market between, I think, content owners and crawlers who desire to crawl that content. I haven't studied it carefully, but it feels like it's kind of that old style of like IP address, you know, addressing of content, whereas EnPubs could be like the new way that we address content. And just a whole new ecosystem could be built that has a lot fewer control points around it.
We have a few audience questions, so let's go through those. One was from early on, but let's just address it. Austin asked, did you just say Elon? DK is walking with Elon, and he's not a Bitcoin maxi yet. But apologies for my pronunciation, but I said Elod Gil. not Elon. But I'm not sure.
Is Elod a Bitcoin maxi yet? If not, why not?
He's not a Bitcoin maxi, but I think he gets the value proposition of Bitcoin.
He just needs to get on BitChat with DK and then be Max.
And then Diana asks, isn't there a layer of anonymity with the favoriting feature in new Purple release, which is the latest BitChat release from today? And well, I mean, let's walk through what I mean. I mean, when you're on BitChat, you start off anonymous. It gives you some like, you know, Anon 6506 or whatever. You can change the name to your own NIM or your actual name or whatever. So you can stay anonymous. And then if I then connected with Max in real life, I mean, we would see each other, chat with each other. We could favorite each other. Still don't necessarily know our real name or identity. So you can stay as anonymous as you want.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can sort of, you choose what you reveal.
Yeah. I think what's also interesting that, so we all, you know, in the office without doxing anyone, changed to our preferred pseudonyms. So it was kind of easy to figure out who Moneyball is, as an example. However, I do imagine, I mean, one tricky thing that I can imagine here is imagine you're like at a festival or something where there's like, potential adversaries. And imagine I'm like, oh, I think this is Moneyball and there's another Moneyball and I accidentally like friend the wrong Moneyball. I guess in theory, if we're right next to each other and we're checking the PGP key or whatever it is, the fingerprint, that's solved. But like, imagine I'm just like, you know, I'm a normie that is, you know, acquiring honey.
Well, like, that's why we chatted a little bit about this, but I think there could be design improvements on the fingerprinting.
Yeah.
Because it's right now it's very similar to Signal. And even most Signal users, I think, either aren't even aware of this, kind of buried, and it's pretty nerdy. It's very, you know, cryptography heavy and stuff. So, is there a better design where it's integrated into the favoriting and just presented as a more human fun way?
Yeah.
And you still might have to like verify these codes or whatever, but I think it could use some design work. So I shared that idea with folks planning the Bitcoin Design Week in September, and they agreed that's a good idea. So that can be like a design exploration we do there.
Well, and the other thing I was going to say is like, you know, another solution. So if you want to have another NIM or be anonymous, then like, yes, that's a different field. But again, let's say I want on BitChat to be, you know, whatever max that I am on Primal. It would be really nice if there's an easy way just to like link up and like step one, borrow my NIP5 identifier from Primal. So I think I'm using, you know, I was using Primal, now I'm using Nostr.com. So like easily just like transfer that. And then eventually, you know, DK, come in with your, you know, if I own namespace on Bitcoin, like be able to layer it into that. Like, I think in the long run, like that would be the best option still.
Right now, if I understand, when I've used BitChat once at PV and I was able to change my name to DK. So is that a unique name within that particular chat mesh, or is that like you could have conflicting names?
Well, I'm assuming you could have conflicting names. It's an interesting question. I mean, maybe it is blocked, but I'm operating under the assumption that I could try and like fool people by being DK.
Yeah, I haven't tested it. I think you could conflict right now. And then, you know, you could imagine adding code to make it not conflict within that particular mesh network.
The Nostr linking sounds kind of cool because you could link to a Nostr but not make it browsable. But I could like selectively reveal my Nostr connection. So like if you're looking for DK and there's five people who claim to be DK, but I've signed you know, with my Nostr private key, you can see that this is the one that attaches to the DK that you know from Nostr.
Yeah, that's a good idea. There's a clear, so apologies if I'm pronouncing your name wrong, but Diana, she says that was related to the NPub discussion and why not connect to my own versus one created in BitChat, though I still don't know how this works yet. So,
yeah, I think we're saying the same thing.
I think you sort of spoke to that, DK.
We hope soon.
Yeah, but super exciting. Let's talk a little bit more about payments. Actually, I wanted to say for Bitcoin Design Week, I think we should explore not just that one feature within BitChat. I could see an entire like day or session or track covering BitChat design.
Yeah.
And because there's so many positive implications, not only for Nostr, but for Bitcoin and payments and everything we just talked about, I think it's like very on point for Bitcoin Design Week.
Yeah,
so
I agree.
I'll be following up on that.
I love it. But before we jump into the payments stuff, I wanted to just touch one more thing. I mean, I do think it's very rare to get like any kind of breakout. Like the hardest thing in the world of, as we've talked about many times in the show, if you're releasing products or content or whatever, like attention is a scarce resource. So the fact that there's already over 100,000 downloads for BitChat is awesome and like very something precious. One question I still don't know if I fully understand. DK, you hypothesized that the reason Russia and Ukraine might be the other big areas is because of dense apartments. But like, to be clear, there's dense apartments all over the world. There's dense apartments in Asia. There's dense apartments in New York City. And maybe that's where, you know, the US is. If you guys, y'all have any other hypotheses on why this is popping off there, do you think it's like actually more of like a freedom, like people really need it? Or is there another reason that culturally they've been early adopters?
Unclear. I mean, obviously Jack promoting it, he's way more prominent than I don't even know who created Fireside or Gotenna or any of these things, but like he's, you know, he has a way bigger reach. So it could be that just simply better marketing.
It could be, but I mean, Jack's also huge in Japan, but like, so I guess my question is like,
why
Russia and Ukraine and not?
Yeah. Unclear.
I wanted to check on the stats that we saw. I think somebody shared it in our chat. With the where Russia was number one, was that in that was iOS downloads or that was kind of across BitChat?
Well, it's only iOS. It's not in the Play Store yet.
But doesn't
well, there's a fake, oh, there's not, a okay. there's a quote fake. There's someone not named Cali who put it in the Play Store before him. So the only people running on Android right now is if you go to GitHub, build it yourself, sideload it, which is probably a few people, but. It's primarily
iOS,
iPhone.
And I'm not sure if Russia, I think US was still number one. I mean, they were like close.
Okay. I thought Russia was the largest bar in the chart that I saw.
It could have been. But, I mean, US was certainly up there too.
Cool. But so, I don't know. I mean, it could be a freedom issue. Could be sometimes there's like some strange thing that you can't even know. Like maybe like we think of data plans as free, but maybe certain telcos like in Russia just don't have free data plans and messaging still has some other data cost to it that people don't like to endure. So, you know, I think there's just like people are in very different contexts that I think unless you really kind of do a deeper study of it, I think it's hard to.
That's a good hypothesis. It's worth the deeper study though, I think, right?
Yeah.
Because we do, I mean, there's the lingering question. This has been tried before.
Why now?
Why is there more hype now? And also is the hype going to die? Like it's a risky app in the sense that like by the end of the year, maybe everyone's just sort of forgotten about it. That, you know, no one's downloading BitChat anymore. No one's using it because it still didn't take off. There's that risk still. So, you know, so it does bear investigation. Why is it taking off in Ukraine and Russia?
Right.
And that can suggest what priorities should be placed in both features and app development, but also how it's marketed, how it's discussed, how, you know, promoters of it, you know, people who are excited about it. Want to talk about it.
Or how complementary apps are built. So one thing, I've made this call on the show before, but I want to make it again because I think it's very timely right now. One of the companies I would love to fund out of Hivemind is someone working on basically building and monetizing a marketplace for bandwidth. So healing without the shitcoin. If ever there were a time to be exploring that idea heavily, now is that time. So if there's someone listening to the show or you know someone who is really interested in figuring out how to enable these long tail of entrepreneurs to sell hot dogs, metaphorically, to sell bandwidth and make money on it, I am extremely interested and would love to fund that idea.
Yep, I totally agree.
I agree. I think that's a great one. And I also want to point out your other one that you've sort of been beating the drum on, this kind of local Bitcoins idea.
Yeah.
Feels like it's kind of, that's one whose time has come. And it may be that BitChat has enough early traction that there could be a killer app that sort of rides on those rails, that's actually kind of more, gives more durability or permanence to the use case of BitChat. And I think the local Bitcoin one strikes me as interesting because, again, you know, we have sort of prior art that this is interesting and useful, and we just have like some problems with how the execution and regulatory thing works, and some of that is fixed by the BitChat rails. So I think like one way to kind of help this whole effort is find those killer apps, and that seems like it could be a killer app to me.
So three ideas I want to publicly say then that I'm very interested in funding right now. Number one is figure out how to monetize bandwidth in a marketplace. Number two, local Bitcoins. Number three, piggybacking on the other idea, which I've been obsessed with, we've all been chatting about now for months, is how to build the infrastructure, likely with solar and batteries, which is my other general obsession in the world right now, so that you could basically fund and deploy hotspots all over the world that are completely off grid. I think there's something really big in there too, which kind of relates to the first idea. So maybe they're related.
With battery?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Completely off grid.
Ram just posted Apple has contact key verification and there's a link. So we can check that out later.
Yeah. Thanks, Ram.
Contact key verification. That's to verify that a key is related to somebody in your contact list?
I guess.
Is it? Oh, okay. I thought you guys had more context.
I can't click on the link right now. So,
yeah. Ram, maybe you can specify exactly what you mean with that, but I think so.
I want to talk a little more about payments here. So there's different situations where you want to do payments. One in which you're paying a merchant nearby. They might have an internet connection. So there, it actually works quite well, even if you don't have an internet connection, or you do, but you don't want to use it. Like if it's a privacy sensitive purchase, you can just use BitChat and Bitcoin, pay the merchant, and they have the internet connection to finalize the payment. And it doesn't matter whether you're using eCash or Lightning or whatever to finalize a payment in Bitcoin, you have to have an internet connection. The merchant can provide that. So either could work. Now there's also purely offline transactions, and there you do have some trust, but like with eCash, like if I want to pay, let's say it's like a farmer's market and every week I go and buy, you know, fresh fish from Max. So I'm like a trusted customer. Max knows I'm
he
there.
Needed to slap yeah, me above with it.
Max the fishmonger.
People will have to use BitChat to really understand that joke. But yes, you can slap people with fish in BitChat. So there's a trusted relationship. Like I'm a recurring customer. I successfully pay every week. So if Max does not have an internet connection, nor do I, and I pay him, you know, $20 worth of Bitcoin, and he doesn't, it actually doesn't get settled until the end of the day when you regain internet, you will receive that money. The only way you wouldn't is if I double spend it, which I could do. But, you know, A, I have to go out of my way. I have to, like, change the code or download a nefarious app intentionally trying to steal people's money.
Burn all your trust with me.
Burn all the, yeah. So in there's many social situations where you're gonna trust another person. If you're splitting a dinner bill with friends or whatever, there's lots of different relationships where it's trusted and you can get away with that. So if you are in a situation where you don't have internet, due to being out in the middle of nowhere, a disaster situation, or if you want ultimate privacy, then you can do purchases that way as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's super cool. I mean, one other kind of idea that's coming to mind, just real talk or real time and real talk, is you know, I've been really fascinated. I have a buddy who is into Bitcoin, but is more in this kind of like, I would say sort of solar punk alternative currency, local currency movement. He likes Bitcoin, but we've been talking about this idea for, I don't know, 7 years now. Actually, this is the guy I did the sort of Bitcoin distribution with in Mexico a long time ago. We've been talking about is, could you have sort of basically like Bitcoin backed local currencies? And so we're already starting to see, I think eventually we'll see formally Bitcoin backed dollars. We're already seeing informally Bitcoin backed dollars through Strategy and I think potentially other stable coins. But I wonder if there's like a cool, I don't know what the killer feature is here, but some cool idea space where it's like, maybe it's a BitChat, but if we're all in the same local community, like in Presidio Bitcoin or whatever at El Zante, you know, the farmer's market, if you could have like, if there are some advantages to having a local currency that you can only use if you're there within the range and the Bluetooth network that maybe has some additional kicker features, like maybe there's, I don't know, like some, I'm not sure exactly what it is, but like I just have this vision of different countries or locales backing with Bitcoin, but still being able to like adjust their currency rate or features. Like, oh, you can only use this to get a 10% discount in our community. So if you buy with Bitcoin, it's $10. If you buy with, you know, PBJ or El Zante currency, you get a local discount to encourage more people to move there or something like that. So you still have levers you can pull as a government or as a local community or body. I'm not sure, but I think there's some idea space there that's cool and worth exploring.
Yeah, it could be interesting to explore. I still like inflation is the only benefit I see. And that gets into an interesting economics discussion. Yeah. And, you know, you can certainly make cases for benefits of being able to
have inflation at certain points.
Have inflation and have humans, like for a local situation or some subset of the population, like be able to intervene.
Yeah.
Whereas with Bitcoin, you can't, like no local constituent can like intervene. So,
well, I mean, to be clear, like one idea that's coming to mind is like, imagine you're in a small community and you're like, look, we want to encourage people to like invest in the community, not just with their capital, but like live here. And so if you're paying with our local currency, you can only do it over whatever the Bluetooth network and you get whatever a third off of whatever you buy in the community. But like it literally only works if you're like double starred in our local community. And if you're not, you have to pay the full price of Bitcoin. So it's almost like, I don't know, like a way for people to, I don't know, incentivize like time or like energy investment in addition to just, and yes, like obviously.
But being on that local mesh network or double start or whatever, doesn't
yeah, that's that a good point.
Get, like, so deliver the value that the local community is seeking.
Yeah, yeah. That's a fair point. So maybe just a double star. There's something
but interesting. There should be more recurrence, I think, right? Like somebody who lives there more permanently and has more recurring transactions, maybe more trusted, better contributor versus somebody who happens to be, maybe they're in for a vacation. They are in the mesh in kind of local area, but they're not as much of a permanent contributor to the community.
But I definitely see your point that if you build up that reputation web of trust over time, maybe if you're still paying in Bitcoin, you don't actually need the currency, but there's still two price rates. There's like the people that live here and the people that don't.
So Diana asks how you slap someone with a trout on BitChat, and I'll answer that question.
The important hard-hitting questions.
If you have to tap on the person's name, but not at the top of the app, but like within the chat log, just tap on their name and then you get a menu in which you can hug them or slap them.
Now,
there you go.
Deanna also asks, how do you get the Solarpunk DAO crypto folks to get on the Bitcoin maxi train? I mean, let's start by
winning in the market. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, winning in the market, and like, let's start by like leading by example, right? Like this is my new obsession. So for those of you who aren't aware, we'll talk more about this in the future, but I am increasingly thinking about eventually how do we get a terawatt scale grid completely off grid from the old grid, and all solar, all batteries. And I mean, obviously that's like a long-term project, but short-term project. I mean, I already saw there's like a community north of here, one of the more traditional, like stripey, crypto-y people, who, you know, obviously I disagree with all their crypto crap, but they do have cool solar punk values, and they built a, you know, an off-grid solar powered data center, which I thought was awesome. Now imagine if they also had a miner hooked up, or I don't know, they could get paid in Bitcoin, you know, for people that want to plug into the cloud they're building. I don't know. I think it's probably one of the
more like a educational use, or that's like a commercial project.
I think they were just doing it as a proof of concept. But again, like, you know, I don't know what the answer, a lot of this, it's very challenging in that there's been so much of a divide, you know, between the crypto people and the Bitcoin people for so long. I mean, I don't know if it's just like education, but like, it'd be really cool to get those people to come to Presidio Bitcoin and be like, we love your solar punk ethos. We'd love to help you power with Bitcoin. You don't need, you know, a token. But I mean, to your point, maybe the answer is just like, no one's going to pay with their shitcoins because there's no liquidity, but over time they'll just naturally adopt Bitcoin because that's what it's won. I don't know.
We talk about a few other things. We got like 20 or so minutes left.
Oh shit, it's already 120.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I think this one's super quick, but multiple times this year, I've heard DK say that there's in-kind redemptions from the SEC.
Oh, yeah. I think we hear this like every other day from DK.
But now we find, now he can finally say this with confidence because the
SEC. Truth.
In truth. Yeah.
I've been saying it with confidence the whole time.
Exactly.
Now it's actually true.
Exactly.
Yeah. So the SEC approved in-kind redemptions for Bitcoin ETFs, which is amazing news, with a caveat that it's only for like accredited investors or authorized participants. Authorized participants, which is what? Institutional funds?
Yeah. So my understanding is when, you know, you've got a, like an entity like a BlackRock or a Bitwise or somebody who is the issuer of the ETF or the organizer, the marketer of the ETF, they still have to work with, you know, somebody like a Jane Street or a Citadel, I think, is in this business. And they're in the business of being this authorized participant. And they help manage the liquidity of kind of how much capital needs to be available to be able to run all the transactions and not get slippage and kind of get good pricing, efficient pricing when moving between Bitcoin and Cash. And so this is really just allowing the authorized participants to be able to not have to keep getting back into Cash, which means you end up tying up a lot of capital. I've heard, you know, it can be of $100 million that has to be tied up in a given day in order to be able to just run the operations of an ETF. And obviously, if you can make that number a lot smaller because you got a lot more efficiency there, then you sort of don't have to have that capital tied up. So this is sort of, accredited investors do not have any changes. Authorized participants have changes. They're a very niche part of the market, and they don't necessarily, it doesn't imply that it will get to retail, but I think without this step, I think it would be hard to get to retail ever. So I think this is like one step, but not necessarily confirming that it gets to retail.
Okay. It sounds like an even tinier step after that description.
Yeah, I'm less jazzed.
But nonetheless,
better than
a tiny step in the right direction.
Well, it's necessary. It's probably necessary, but not sufficient.
Yeah. And the reason for people who didn't listen last week or haven't heard us talk about this, why does this matter? A risk with ETFs is that they create a tax trap. So they are a really nice vehicle for a lot of folks to introduce themselves to Bitcoin and buy their first Bitcoin. But as people who've been in Bitcoin for a while know, number goes up. And so you buy some Bitcoin. Before you know it, it maybe is 10x'd in value. So your cost basis, you know, is like, can be like 10% of the current value. And if you own Bitcoin in an ETF and then later learn, like 4 years later, oh, I actually want to use Bitcoin. I want to be able to send it to people, buy things, use a Bitcoin-backed loan through something self-custodial like Lava. I need access to my Bitcoin. Can't do that with an ETF. But then you face the tax trap because you would have to sell the ETF shares to then rebuy Bitcoin elsewhere so that you can use Bitcoin. And of course, that creates a massive barrier if people are faced with an enormous tax bill. So in-kind redemption for retail would allow you to take the Bitcoin out of the ETF, put it in your own wallet, use it, and not face that tax event.
It's good for freedom. And I'm still bullish.
I think the movement by the SEC, by the way, I think the proposal came in January and it was just approved like on Thursday or Wednesday, I think. I think there's a lot of Bitcoiners are very skeptical of the state and sort of all of its machinations. So am I. But I'll say, I don't think the state is has like this long-term scheme to try to trap all the Bitcoin. Yeah. We think about that because we care about Bitcoin and we think, why would you ever sell this? Why would you ever get rid of it? But the state and politics works on very short timeframes compared to that, like 4 year cycles and stuff. So I actually don't think that there's like some nefarious plan to try to capture all the Bitcoin. Not to say you shouldn't be skeptical and cautious about it, but I would hope that there is a day, and I don't think there's a strong reason not to, a day that you could get from in-kind to retail, from a retail ETF to an in-kind redemption of the native underlying Bitcoin, as you can with, like, you know, gold. But the actual step, you got to think about, like, how much extra work is required to do that. Like, are you going to log into the same account where you log in to buy or sell an ETF, and are you going to give it like a cryptographic address, and are they going to call you up and verify the numbers? Like, there's a bunch of infrastructure and process that would have to be
BitKey integration. Designed.
What is it?
BitKey integration.
Sure. That seems like another possible
in other similar products. But yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I like the fact that, like, TK is still confident. It gives me confidence. However, this also sounds like something a narc would say, so I don't know.
But will it require work? Sure. But it's like, I mean, BitKey's already proven it with Coinbase and Cash App and others. Robinhood, it's like super slick integration. It's like great user experience. It's secure. You can do that with ETFs too.
Sure. I agree you can. And I think that's why I'm kind of optimistic it'll work. And it's just somebody has to build it. It just doesn't work that way today. So somebody has to build, you know, the Schwab interface that lets you sell the ETF and push that, you know, send the transaction to your big.
I tend to agree, but I agree with your point. I agree with your point though, DK. And I think the high order bit is what we talk about mostly on the show, which is we need innovation. We need to build great applications that has user demand. If there's a lot of demand from the population to use applications, to use their Bitcoin, and their Bitcoin's trapped in ETFs, there's going to be political pressure to change that.
Yep.
One thing I want to touch on briefly is the ETFs are honestly much less of a concern for me. I want to just quickly touch on the MicroStrategy call. So I listened to Saylor's earnings call. Not all of it. I listened to him talk for like 45 minutes or 30 minutes. And then I listened to the questions. Lynn was asking a good question. A couple other folks were asking good questions. And a couple high level takeaways that I think are very relevant. Number one, you'll notice I have my thumb is pretty messed up. It was bleeding pretty heavily. Thank you to Alex for getting me some tape. I was slicing onions while listening to the call and got very excited. And so that should tell you a lot of what you need to know. I mean, damn, every time I listen to Saylor speak, I mean, damn, it's like watching Michael Jordan do his thing. Like, unbelievable. Now,
you do look at the markets too, right? It's down 8.77%.
Today. Excellent. Like, time to smash buy. Like, great. Market doesn't understand yet. Efficient market hypothesis, completely wrong.
Okay.
So on the plus side, a couple of quick takeaways. And then I'm curious how this relates to the ETFs and also exchanges that I'm very bullish on. So, number one, two things I took away from that. He mentioned he does agree that Stretch, his dollar-like instrument, the money market, I think money market instrument is better, right? Because that's a $7 trillion industry, right. High yield savings account, huge. He calls it the iPhone moment for MicroStrategy. I could not agree more. MicroStrategy is still Apple pre-iPhone, maybe even you can argue like 1980s Apple. People have not understood it yet, but once they do, it's clear to me that he wants not just, you know, to go after institutional finance, he wants retail. He wants the whole global market coming and storing with him. And I think he's going to get it because it's going to be really hard to compete with 9% or whatever he's giving on his Bitcoin back to money market. Okay. So, oh my God, that's really bullish for MicroStrategy. Number two,
the IPO, I think, was $2.5 billion. It came out to, right?
Yes. And by the way,
that $2.5 billion of what can be $7 trillion. And the people who make those decisions are just extremely just numbers driven. Like, you're going to give me an extra 50 bips, of course I'm going to come over there. Right. So that's 9% competing with 4.5% or whatever.
I mean, it's unfair.
What is the money market?
And then, you know, eventually this spills down to retail, who says, hey, I have whatever, a high yield savings account with Marcus, Goldman Sachs, or with Fidel, I don't even know, like whatever people have. And it's like, why don't I just go into this product? And by the way, someone, maybe it'll be him, will probably make like maybe a wrapper around that. Maybe this is a company that just offers high yield savings, just like, because if someone doesn't even have a Vanguard account or a Fidelity account, I'm like, how can they access this? I bet someone's going to come up with a wrapper. I don't know what the legality is around that, but like, there's a huge opportunity just in letting normal people tap into that. Then though, what I started realizing is, you know, when Saylor gave his speech, he was kind of like, oh, and like, I'm glad there's all these other like Bitcoin treasury companies. They're going after the other markets and, you know, it's all good. Then the president dude, Fong, the guy that's like, I guess, running day-to-day operations, he comes on. And I guess this was like a little bit of alpha in there because he answered a question where he was like, yeah, we're like considering just like going to every other market and making the offer. It's like, do we do it with dollars or do we do it with their currency? So again, I'm extremely, extremely sure that Taylor's going to like just like roll up all these other treasury companies, either when they blow up or if they're prudent risk managers for pennies on the dollar, pennies on the Bitcoin, whatever it is. So that's all very bullish. Now, to our point, someone asked him the question. They were like, hey man, like basically tip of the hat.
Sats on the Bitcoin.
Sorry. Bitcoin on the Bitcoin. Yeah, exactly. We need a better way to say that. Like, I know you guys are all in on the Bitcoin train. I get it, but like Bitcoin on the Bitcoin. We need a way to say that. Anyways, so someone's like giving him the hat tip and then they kind of ask a little bit the freedom question. They're like, but like, bro, you've already got 3% of the market. Now there's, I think, 11% of the market that's all in institutions. Isn't this going to kill Bitcoin? I actually thought his answer was pretty good, where he's like, look, even if we absolutely go out there and take 7.5% of the market, right? Which, by the way, he claims getting 7.5% from where they are today at 2% would drive the price to $10 million a coin. That's kind of interesting. Let's say he even gets to 10% of the market, right? And a third of the whole market is held. You and I were having this conversation, I think, last week. A third of the market is all held by institutions. I mean, I do think, and a third, let's say, even gets lost. And one day quantum, you know, there's still at least a third of the market, hopefully more, that's held by early people. And I do think that, you know, his point was like, yeah, well, these like early hodlers. And by the way, I think this is something that's not talked enough about enough. It's how the world is going to change. What's the world going to look like when like the multi billionaires are like wild people that bought it in 2011 and never sold? I mean, they're going to be, for the most part, pro-freedom and funding some pretty crazy stuff. So that made me feel a little bit better about all of this, of like, even if there is sort of the institutional like neutering of Bitcoin, it will never be completely neutered as long as the wild men and potentially women hold their early coins. So that's good. But I did start thinking about this a bit more. And it's like, you know, I have been extremely long on companies like River. I've, you know, said this many times, think it's a generational company. I think they're building JP Morgan while Coinbase is building, you know, Caesars, as Alex said. I think that's great. But then, if I'm being frank, the more I think about this, even with the ETFs or exchanges like them or Coinbase or however, I do wonder, like, I mean, they'll always have a place because of this customer service and the ability to get your Bitcoin in and out. But like, Alex has a great product, right? I put in dollars, I get Bitcoin returns out. I think they're paying like 3 or 4%. Like, that's awesome. But like, can anyone, any of these exchanges compete? I mean, if Sailor is able to give you 9%, can anyone compete? Or is he just literally going to put all the banks out of business too?
It's a good question, but to be clear, I think the expectation that 9% comes down because he's going to, he wants to move it down, right?
Of course.
He's going to test the market. How much demand is there at 9%? It's going well? Great. Let's reduce it to 8.5, 8.
Totally.
Down to 5.5, whatever. He'll find where the perfect spot is.
But to be clear, I'm saying higher than what everyone else can get.
Yeah. I agree. It's a good question. I just wanted to outline, like, we talked last week about risks to Bitcoin, whether it's strategy or ETFs or whatever, like gobble up all these Bitcoin. I think there's like at least three different risks to talk about. And we've already talked about some of them, but, one is, that there's risk to like the Bitcoin consensus rules if there's too much concentration. Another risk is the Bitcoin network itself. If there's not network activity, then there's not fees to pay miners and the entire experiment dies because you lose the security model of miners. And what's the third one? I forget the third one.
The third one too.
Yeah. Anyway, in our conversation after the show last week, I felt like we had pretty good answers to a lot of those. So I became
less worried.
Less worried is definitely something we should keep talking about. But like the protocol rules, I'm just not super concerned by that. And it's because Bitcoin uses proof of work and it doesn't use proof of stake.
Yeah.
If it used proof of stake, then we should all be extremely concerned because there's a direct relationship then on the Bitcoin, whoever's holding the Bitcoin. Even if shareholders or others are the legal owners, it's whoever's holding the Bitcoin
that makes it a
decision. Oh, I thought of the third risk. Before I forget, real quick, the third risk is the honeypot risk.
Yeah.
So like if Strategy has, right, I think Coinbase has like 3 million Bitcoin or something now that they're custodying, yeah. Right? And that'll only grow if they're supporting more, you know, more BlackRock's, more Strategies, or just those companies grow. But getting back to the consensus rules, because Bitcoin's based on proof of work, and the Bitcoin consensus analysis project, which I worked on last year with Lynn and Ren, we go into this in detail. But like, what power do investors have? Their primary power, which is like the nuclear option, that they can sell Bitcoin, mm-hmm. or if there's a fork, they can sell one of the forks, mm-hmm. and that's very, very, very powerful. It's the most powerful out of everyone's like powers. But do we really think a Strategy is going to dump all their Bitcoin because they don't like, you know, adding a covenant feature to Bitcoin? I don't think they will. I think if they don't like that because they don't want Bitcoin touched and they don't risk to Bitcoin in that way, they'll definitely go on a
campaign.
So that would be more the influencer stakeholder category that we outlined in that paper, not the investor category. And that can be effective. Influencing absolutely can be effective. Like Sailor could go to the miners, could go to the exchanges and say, don't do this. And like, all right, like you go to Coinbase and say, don't upgrade, or I'm going to pull my money out of Coinbase and go somewhere else. There's those types of powers. So there's still power there, but like, I don't believe they're going to just like quit their business and yeah. sell Bitcoin. So I'm not super worried about protocol risk. Then the Bitcoin network risk, we're going to keep talking about that on the show because that is, I think, one of the biggest risks to Bitcoin. We need there to be sufficient self-custody in Bitcoin so that people are actually doing real Bitcoin transactions in the network and generating fees in order to keep the network alive. And this isn't you said in 2 years, if we don't have this, we're dead. I think it's more like 2 decades, but like, we can't just blow it up. It's somewhere in there. I mean, we can't just like be like, it's 20 years away. Yeah. We'll worry about it then. Because then if no one's worried about it, we haven't developed compelling applications, compelling reasons beyond just buying the Bitcoin ETF, then Bitcoin is going to be a dead experiment. So we should keep talking about that, but I'm not too worried about that because we talk about innovation all the time and like let's keep driving that narrative.
I agree.
The third thing, the honeypot, I think that's the biggest actual risk. And so if Strategy is accumulating an insane amount of coins or BlackRock or whatever, and then they're in charge of where those coins are stored. And my understanding is that Strategy does diversify across a few, like Fidelity, Coinbase, and maybe another custodian. That's certainly better than not diversifying, but it's still a lot of coins. And then you take a Coinbase or Fidelity and they have multiple customers and themselves or whatever. It's a lot of coins. So that's a big risk. I mean, we've talked about quantum risks on the show. We had an event and like one of the risks is like, well, a quantum computer can steal like 1 million coins or 2 million coins. Well, guess what? Today, right now, there is no quantum computer that can do that. But absolutely, there are cyber hackers around the world who can break into Coinbase or other custodians and steal the Bitcoin.
Definitely.
Obviously, those companies have like multiple layers of defense. It's low probability. It's super hard to do. But as the honeypot grows, their incentive grows to do it.
And as nation states, I mean, like maybe they're good against normal hackers, but like, are they good against China coming in? Like it's going to get a lot more intense. So I wouldn't want to be in charge of that.
Anything else on strategy?
Did you learn? No, I mean, I think just in general, like I continue to be just blown away by the opportunity and maybe slightly less concerned this week than I was last week with the freedom concerns. But I think it's something we definitely need to be vigilant on. And also to your point, I do think, could they stop it? Probably not. But like, if we want to get a covenant through, like sooner is better because I guarantee you the more they accumulate, they're not going to be. And so.
All right.
Yeah.
2026 it is.
Yeah. Covenants in 26. There it is.
All right. I think we're way over time at this point.
No,
and I have to leave.
We started late.
We're 1 minute and 30 seconds.
We started late. So I promise.
You want to go that bad, DK Lord.
Ready to move at 1:30 and now it's 1:40. So I have an errand to run. You guys want to keep jamming?
No.
But I'm going to have to call it a wrap.
It's a good show.
Just hit us on BitChat.
Yeah. Well, I'll be back soon. And I want to talk more about the local Bitcoin idea.
Yeah.
And I'd like to, I think it's because that'd be a fun one. I was just thinking it'd be a fun one to do at a builder event.
Yeah.
If we could actually play with your local Bitcoin idea. But I've actually browsed the website, but never transacted. And I don't know if you've transacted or could describe more about your experience with it, but I think that would be an interesting little brainstorm session we can do offline. But maybe we'll come back and have something to build for builder.
I'll say again, nice try, Fed, but...
Notice he's not in person with us.
I know.
Do we even really know we're talking to DK?
I don't know. I'm going to want to see a proof of signature.
Synthetic influencer, DK.
Exactly.
All right.
Have a good one.
Bye, guys.
See you, everyone.
See you
guys soon.